Welcome to the Dynamic Duo, where you can catch Kevin Barrett on Mondays and Fridays and Jim Fetzer during the middle 3 days of the week. I am your guest host today, this first Wednesday of September 2008, Morgan Reynolds. Some of you know who I am, and you can visit my website at nomoregames.net. This afternoon, I speak to you from my home in Arkansas, where the rains of Hurricane Gustav continue outside my window and pelt the state. My wife's drive to work this morning was aborted because of flooding and down trees and lots of power outages, lines down. And I noticed they claim that the Bush-Cheney visits to the Republican convention were aborted because of the storm, the Hurricane Gustav. That was pretty dang convenient. But a lot of the delegates up there in St. Paul were breathing a sigh of relief, no doubt. Glenn Greenwald, writing for Salon.com, reports on a heavily militarized St. Paul with lots of heavy-handed police tactics, including the arrest of Amy Goodman and other journalists. And I was actually in St. Paul doing a little tour back on Saturday, and I can concur that there was a heavy police presence as they got ready for the Republicrats to come into town. Now, a lot of people seem to watch these nightly infomercials called the National Conventions of the two major parties, and I suspect that many of them are under the delusion that Barack Hussein Obama or John Sidney McCain III will move the nation to higher ground and bring peace and succor to the masses. And the powers that be must hoo-ha and slap their knees about the such deluded members of the public, which are pretty numerous. And we're only 8 days away from the 7th anniversary of the so-called terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, only 8 days from the 7 years after. So how far have we come in exposing the truth and bringing some kind of justice to the real perpetrators during these nearly 7 years? I'd say we've come quite a ways by very many measures. The diligent, unpaid private researchers into 9/11 have unraveled a number of layers in this fraud. The magic show that to fool the babusi, as H.L. Mencken called them, we've come quite a ways compared to, let's say, 7 years after the JFK assassination. And as I recall, the polls seem to show that at least a third of the public knows 9/11 was an inside job of some kind or another, and only 15% say that they embrace the official story, which I call Anya. The Osama and 19 young Arabs pulled off these feats of mass murder and destruction. Yet we're all frustrated. But I think we need to look back and see how far we've come, and there's just no telling what might break this wide open. And my guest today, interested in his views about how to break this wide open and get some of his involvement in the history of promoting the real truth about 9/11 and bringing the perpetrators to justice, and that is Nico Haupt, H-A-U-P-T, Nico. And
yeah.
Nico, yes, Nico, can you
hear me? Yeah, I'm around. I sort of went through the introduction. I hear some feedback, but I have no speakerphone. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's good to have you on the show, the Dynamic Duo. Let me make a couple of statements, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Nico. And Nico lives in New York City. He's a 9/11 researcher. He's really a famous 9/11 activist and researcher. He is was one of the pioneers of the no-plane approach to understanding what happened, and a proponent of the TV fakery that went down regarding fake planes. And he's also, I call him a famous trash talker and emailer. And the host of our dynamic duo radio program, Kevin Barrett, he seems to have a special scorn for Nico, Gerard Holmgren, and the Web Fairy as being troublemakers of the first order. But I see them as real assets, even though we all have our downsides. And Nico's produced a lot of these video mashups, so. Nico, my first question for you is, give us a little biographical background. Were you born in Germany?
Yeah, I was born in Germany, in Hamburg, actually, but I grew up in Rhine area, Cologne, Düsseldorf.
Okay, and that's in Western Germany then, huh?
Yeah, that's also where we still have the best beer and probably most authentic beer. And I was always hanging out with the older people, was very curious in any kind of secrets of life. My father told me how media manipulates readers when at the age of 4. I was very fascinated with that.
Yeah, so there was a tradition in your household of being skeptical about the media and the government.
Yeah, well, sure, right now the word skeptical is a little bit stolen. We have this Orwellian language, but let's come to that later. At the age of 4, my father bought 8 newspapers and put them on the table and said, here, this is a story, but see how the headers are changing and how you can manipulate the message just by shifting around some words. And so I was very fascinated by that, and I was already reading and writing, and so I released my own mock newspaper basically in my home. And then, yeah, later on in school, I released my own newspaper and then college paper. And I worked with a video magazine for 8-10 years. I had my own radio show, Public Access, for 10 years.
And all of this is in Germany?
Yeah, that was all in Germany. And I worked also for the bad guys, so-called mainstream television, but also independent. So I learned all these insider skills and tricks. For sure, I was not that fascinated after a while, because it's basically like a regular job. You just go there, and especially work for television, it's becoming a little bit boring after a while. So I grew up basically from scratch as a cable guy, then in the studios. Then I was an engineer. I helped fading in video captures, and then at the end, my career basically ended as a producer or a set manager. They call it set manager. If you bring the guests and make sure they have everything to drink, and you have your head is rolling if something goes wrong, and you work with the director and so on.
Right, you're kind of administering things so that it all works, comes together.
Yeah, you basically eat it for everything. And here in America, I call it the stage director. So I guess I was also stage director. And
now, you went into your media work career straight from high school, didn't you?
Yeah, but I call it a little bit workaholic. I worked every kind of jobs. So I had always enough money, also cheap rent. And I guess I'm also kind of comedian, maybe not the best. So I was influenced by Monty Python. I brought own series of surreal humor. Also during my radio show, I tried to combine politics with comedy, and then I decided to move to New York with everything.
Okay, we'll pick up with Nico Haupt on the other side of the break when he moves to New York City. Today, I am interviewing Nico Haupt. That's H-A-U-P-T, a famous, well-known 9/11 researcher, activist, and troublemaker, early no-planer, TV fakery proponent. And Nico was just giving us his background in Germany, and the two things stand out to me. One was that by age 4, he knew that the mass media manipulates opinion, and he has quite a career in the media himself. So, Nico, this brings us to your landing in New York City.
Yeah, maybe I have to squeeze in that I was also my whole life surrounded by computer specialists. And I'm basically also kind of pioneer on the internet. I started in 93. So I continued also constantly my research on biopharmacy, future weapons, and logically ended up on the internet, which is itself.
Your pioneering on the internet refers to a 1993 show or entertainment website you had?
Oh, well, at that time, my focus was also still on the music, so I combined my radio show with the internet. I had the first audio stream server in Germany, so we streamed and uploaded music tracks, video tracks later, and that's what also brought me to New York, because in Germany it was all a little bit slower than here in the United States. I started going for Pseudo TV, which is just people do research, possibly one of the biggest entrepreneurs in the internet scene, which might have had some slush funds from the MIT and maybe defense contractors. I always put it out in the open to say I have nothing to hide. I also always talk about my sexual fetishes to make also sure that there is no blackmail attempt. And basically in New York, I continued with my politics meet.
Now, what year was that, Nico, when you got to New York to live?
It was 1999.
Okay.
And so I worked for Josh Harris and supported also his art projects like We Live in Public and Quiet, which was basically a kind of pre-9/11 concept or experiment. He had 65 hotel capsule rooms in a huge double warehouse construction, so everyone could observe each other. It was a huge voyeurism meet, Big Brother, and own interrogation room, which basically resembled the home and security. And, looking back, we know that...
You're getting to too many details for me, but is this a low-budget media effort, innovative media effort that you're engaged in?
No, he was a millionaire. He basically also lost, like everyone, huge money during the dot-com crash, and he spent all this money constantly for art projects and then video projects and just TV.
Okay, I see. And what's the name of the multimillionaire internet guy?
People might find an old Quiet article at Wired Magazine. If they Google Nico Haupt and We Live in Public, Wired Magazine.
Wired, yes, I remember that.
Yes, Wired was a big fan of us. And so also any kind of media was there. It was a huge world spectacle until it was at the end of 99, and there was this Y2K hype. And so we were linked there to a terrorist group, the FEMA Secret Service, and the NYPD showed up and shut down on New Year's Eve the event, but basically just for a missing escalator. So that was how I basically had my first year in New York, and later on I jobbed for furniture companies, Vito Furniture, stood for Josh Harris, and did some video and music stuff. And that brought me then to 9/11.
And that's what you were doing on 9/11 itself?
Well, ironically, I tried to debunk also a reality TV show called Big Brother, the second season. I was on a huge television discussion board. I was a junkie on basically analyzing movies anyway. And so the first season seemed to me very authentic, just installing cameras into a huge apartment and see what the residents are doing. But I assumed that the concept was the Born of America, so it was the second season. I immediately realized how many stuff was scripted. The feed was harder to get, so I compared the feed with the TV edit, and it was complete manipulated script stage. And so they called me then a conspiracy theorist when I laid this all out on the discussion board. And so at 8:53 on that morning, I was still on this message board, and I woke up early also.
Now, are you physically in Manhattan on that morning?
Physically at my office in downtown Ground Zero, but I stay in Brooklyn.
Oh, in Brooklyn, okay.
Yeah, and so someone posted an off-topic thread, basically, tune in your TV, the Twin Towers just got attacked. And that was around 8:53 in the morning, so I tuned in the TV at the same time. As I said, I'm a little bit a media junkie, so I had already television feeds on. I was running on the streets. I had a position where I could see the Twin Towers burning, run back, did updates. I did my own investigation already.
And you're recording all of the video that you can? In other words, the major media, that whatever they're broadcasting?
Yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't. I was at a guy who was himself also a kind of a computer hack, and he didn't record anything at all. We may also, under shock, I don't know, but I was basically just watching and also on a huge screen at one of these first big, huge screens. So I had basically two threads running. The one was very naive, also shocked. I tried to help out. I posted a Red Cross number about late statistics, what's going on, the evacuation from Building 7. I was prepared the whole day on the so-called evacuation of Building 7 and even the collapse. So, and then, but the facts didn't really add up. I had people
okay,
who said
that. Okay, so when you first saw all of this, you said your instincts were to initially at least believe what you were being told and to try to help out by via the Red Cross and the like. But then later in the day, things you began to be suspicious?
Yeah, well, pretty much 1-2 hours later, because I didn't really believe that they coined immediately a mastermind, Bin Laden. I was for one moment thinking that could be also maybe some other Palestine-connected Hamas. Well, with the visuals coming in, I was suspecting it was more like a kind of false flag operation in itself.
Okay, we'll get Nico Hobbs' reaction to 9/11 on the other side of the break. This is Morgan Reynolds on a Dynamic Duo. And my guest today is Nico Haupt, H-A-U-P-T. You can Google him, Nico Haupt. And he's a resident of New York City and a 9/11 researcher, activist, media-savvy individual. And on the other side of the break, Nico was telling us about his experience on the day of 9/11. So let's pick up. You mentioned how your thinking might have changed during the day, if I interpret you correctly, Nico.
Yeah, there were basically 3-4 patterns I tried to follow up on. Not in particular chronological order now, but when I saw the Twin Towers at that time, I used the word collapse. We know now we better speak about
what
was
today. That? I didn't understand. You used the word color? What did you say?
No, I'm saying I was basically following up on particular patterns which stuck me on that day.
Yes.
I think the first visual I had in mind was when the Twin Towers came down, and I wasn't under a naive impression that they really did a controlled demolition to help protecting the area. So I was thinking, oh, they evacuated people, but it's weird. And so when I heard no actually people died in that building, I was a little bit suspicious. And at that time, I had not so much scientific knowledge. So I was just thinking it was a controlled demolition. Now we speak more about disintegration.
Okay, so what you were thinking was they were controlled demolitions, destroyed the Twin Towers, but they were internally planted explosives of a conventional kind. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think at that point I was thinking more about conventional explosives. Again, I thought it was a kind of a political measurement or emergency measurement to help protecting the area. And so when it turned out that people actually died, I was a little suspicious on that one.
Okay.
I also most important, saw then the so-called exclusive footage from amateur filmers, which is the so-called Park Foreman feed, which we know is also cropped from...
And that's where the alleged United Airlines Flight 175 went into the second tower, south tower.
Yeah. So once again, I had a naive impression because I worked the television and I saw it on a huge screen and it brought us into the tower and it looked very surreal. So, wow, these crazy Americans just recreated that hit in a kind of animation. And so, but I put it in the background. I didn't have any suspicion of any other footage. But I thought that's really pretty well done. I don't know why they're doing that and don't explain that they did that, but...
Okay, so even at the time, because of the clarity of this huge screen, it didn't look right to you.
No, it didn't look right, but it did look very American. It again, the naive impression was just that they recreated it just to show it a little bit more dramatic and basically, politicized it.
I know that Joe Keith, another 9/11 critic, is who's an aerospace engineer, thought at the time that they did this animation just because they didn't have real footage, so they were doing it in good faith, so to speak, as an illustrative thing, rather than trying to sell it as the real deal. But they were really selling it as the real deal. So,
right.
Somewhat similar.
Yeah, it was similar. And again, on that discussion board, I was already labeled conspiracy theorist. So when I did this investigative thing, I put that thought more on hold, and I was more following investigative tracks, like this strange story in Western Hotel, and then the facts didn't add up. So,
what strange story in the Western Hotel?
No one knows this story anymore. It's basically like people linked to the suspects were waiting in a Western Hotel in Boston. I think they scrapped that.
In Boston, Massachusetts?
Yeah. I think so.
Uh-huh.
And so, but they scrapped that detail from the plot line later completely. They had also, 2-3 days later, the 20th and 21st hijacker escaping in an Amtrak. And then...
On Amtrak, the railroad passenger train?
Yeah, Amtrak. And that's a very bizarre story, actually, because these people really ended up in jail, and later we know that they changed their plot line also, so then Zacharias Masuri was the 20th hijacker. And so when I left this discussion board in Canada, I thought I had to have other help. I basically looked around on the internet who's researching 9/11. I created then a so-called 9/11 Skeptics Ring, brought my own update.
Okay. Now, in those days, Nico, the early hours and days of 9/11, what kind of number would you put out? What percentage of those in the United States would you say were skeptical or suspicious that this was a false flag operation? I'd say no more than 1 in 20, you know, it'd be low single-digit percentages, wouldn't you? I mean, everybody was scared, even if they had doubts, to speak up.
Yeah, for me, the internet is like a microcosmos. So if you say 20, 30, that's already a huge number, I think. So I was fascinated already 20, 30 individuals or huge websites are looking into it. I think the most popular was What Really Happened. I think Mike Rupert was around.
So he was around from the first, right?
Yeah, I think he did also some kind of timeline. I was influenced by that. I did my own timeline. I hooked up with science people. I created my own science group, which was basically without name, but later we called it the 9/11 Science and Justice Alliance. We had 30 very intelligent people around ourselves, including also the Web Fairy and Gerald Holmgren and Scott Laughey. And so We, at that time, for sure, we called theories. Not every theory was popular, some more, some less. I was still thinking about this, at that time I didn't use TV safety word, but I was still thinking about this footage, and I was a little competing behind the scenes with Rosalie in how far it's possible to maybe
now,
take
how
more.
Far away, how long after 9/11 is what you're talking about now? I mean, this is like 3 months
We're going now three, four months into it, and we had first highlights, we had the controlled demolition, basically conventional is pretty much laid out. I was on investigative stuff more, so I let the a more compiled designs in my mailing list. I had prior knowledge research.
And maybe 20 of you or so are collaborating and emailing each other, or is it all being posted on the internet?
Well, it was a closed mailing list, but we posted some of our results in other mailing lists, and often when we try to precise details, we had some molds, they leaked out into the oven and was misconstrued, or the spin was bad. But main focus was science. Is it possible that Mopovich was manipulated? Was more 1 year later when we...
Okay, we'll follow that timeline about the research into 9/11 with Nico Haupt on the other side of the break. This is your host, Morgan Reynolds. Guest is Nico Haupt. That is H-A-U-P-T. Hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's the way we'd say it in English. He's a resident of New York City, a native of Germany. A prominent 9/11 researcher, activist, media expert, early no-planer, TV fakery expert, trash talker of the first order, object of Kevin Barrett's scorn, mashup producer, and I could go on. But Nico, before we had the break, I was thinking over your smallish group where you had email lists and everybody is seems like contributing in a productive way to try to peel the layers of this 9/11 onion off. And it occurred to me that there were I want to get your take on one researcher that it's outside this group, this early group, is Thierry Masson. And I know one of the he came out with a couple of books that caused something of a sensation in France. He's the French journalist. One of them I have on my shelf, 9/11, The Big Lie. And he certainly challenged the official plane story at the Pentagon. And then there was another group, a pair of co-researchers, Jared Israel and Ilarion Baikov. Did you have anything, what's your take on the efforts of these researchers?
Oh, yeah, I had, Jared Israel, I was very respectful guy for me. I mean, I was a little bit to Jared Israel, not so much because politicizing too much, but GMSN, I was a little more suspicious because he tried to get in touch with every kind of research analyst, and it was very hard to get to CMSN. I think later I also wasn't...
He was trying to get in touch with you and your friends, or...?
I was more working with Killtown and other Pentagon people.
Okay.
So, they were more obsessed in the details and later particular points of visuals.
So Thierry Masson is kind of a lone researcher author,
right,
and none of the people that we would normally name were associated with him.
Oh, I have no problem with loners. I worked also my whole life with loners. It was just was very isolated. So I think by now and also later, I thought he had particular prior insider knowledge leak, maybe. Let's say French intelligence cooperating with some of the perps to produce this Pentagon detail, I call the detail more as a honeypot, to distract, this is a root word.
I see. Is there kind of an Easter egg
yeah,
they're throwing out there to distract and mislead?
Yeah, very convenient Easter eggs. I analyze a lot of convenient Easter eggs, like the remote control plane theory was always linked to Jew baiting and anti-Semitism. This was very interesting, and the Messian angle went more to the LaRouchians. So you find all these honeypots, whether planted or very convenient laid out. You find some political mind operation layer into it. So, but I respected any kind of scientific research. I was a big fan from the panel for sure, but also still New York, Shanksville. And as I said, the tea fakery was a very, very underground. We debated just two, three people, Scott Laufey and Holmgren. And when we finally thought there is something into it, we had to go to all footage again, and that this was when the holography thesis basically thinned out.
Okay, what is that, 2002 sometime? Or
that was around,
about a year into your email list?
At least a year into it, because I big impression to all the other scientific researchers, so I put my opinion on that very, very low. And I was also already on democraticunderground.com, a huge left gatekeeper forum. At that time, I was also still more naive, thought I have to do now something with politics. That was all between the years, end of 2001 and 2002, and 1 year later, I was also already banned when I emphasized too many facts which they didn't like.
What kind of issues are you bringing up? The no planes and video fakery, some unconventional destruction means used at the WTC, or what were the scientific forensic issues?
I think the most biggest controversy was still just the analysis of Twin Towers destruction, and a lot of people got attacked with, I call them daisy committees, which I think were shielded, impostering one personality while they're written 24/7. We have this famous guy called Larratt, he's still around. He might be just a flag of a coup, but at that time, we thought it's a daisy committee, and I still believe he is written. So we have these kind of script for particular personalities and entities. And well, I was already a little bit transgression, freaked out a little bit too much, and I basically got banned because of all of this, I assume.
Personal attacks and all that.
Yeah, well, right. I tried to discipline myself actually for a lot of years, 2002, 2003, and we're going deep now into the research, into the NAND movement itself, and when I had my biggest suspicion about how highly infiltrated this movement already is, I became the bad guy from the movement, and that was 2004.
Now when did the 911truth.org and its branches show up with all this money and influence?
Yeah, it was also between the years 2003 and 2004. I helped basically establishing all major elements, like first meetup group in New York, and we had the 9 Truth Alliance, the mailing list which turned to 9 Truth. We had these meetings, the debates, do we need a kind of constitution or whatever. This all turned me off, actually, to be honest, already. I want to do more with media. I work at Iron and Verb Report. I'm jumping now back and forth, but I'm just want to squeeze in as much before 6 p.m. Because so many things happened, I had my suspicions, and we had our own TV show also in public access, 2002, Shadow Government TV. I used all these parody words or that time already.
Mean like the 9/11 half truth movement?
Yeah,
or
the half truth
or
movement.
Similar words labeling them as following V.I. Lenin's stricture, we shall control the opposition by leading it?
Yeah, I always want to have everyone turn to media activists playing more with video and TV, doing their own show. But I was always also a reporter, so I always said, oh, this is going on in San Francisco now, this is here in New York, this is the...
Yes, right.
Calibre, yeah, I mean, I was a big friend.
You used to be big on biographical data to sniff out the untrustworthy, right?
Yeah. Well, the big turnout in Canada, where money was linked, John Gray and Khashoggi was basically the big shop where I said, no, this turns now into a cult. And I'm an outspoken cult critique since I'm young. In Germany, for sure, it's a little bit different than here. It's protect by freedom of speech, but I said, no, I don't want to be associated with a group who's looking like Jehovah's Witness. And I call them the Special K activists. I put more transgression comedy into it. But later, I was just saying, no, I don't want to be with it. But at that time, I had already almost my own new political group people, Team A Plus. That's my research team I started in 2003, 2004.
Okay, we've got to take a break again, including the news, and we'll be back with Nico Hopp. This is your host on the Dynamic Duo, Morgan Reynolds. Today, I am interviewing Nico Hopp, a legendary 9/11 researcher, activist, troublemaker, early no-planer, TV fakery proponent, and object of Kevin Barrett's scorn. And we're going to open this segment with a caller, Mark from Pennsylvania. Mark, how are you doing? Oh, he dropped off? Oh, too bad, too bad. Would have been interesting to know what he had in mind in Pennsylvania. Okay, well, Nico, let's go to a couple of the viciously debated issues around 9/11. Now, what is your position on, you of course, regarding planes, no planes, you say there were no planes at any of the four sites that 9/11, the official story says, involved airliner crashes.
Yeah, I'm always refining the details. You know, the label "no planes" was created during 2004 when we analyzed footage. At the same time, we did no-flight research. So it was an insult, I think, created by Mark Bilk. And later, we took that label basically as a kind of honor, or more like.
Okay, I see. I always wondered about that. That the no-plane label actually comes from an enemy of no planes. That is Mark Bilk.
Well, I think it was Mark Bilk or close to him, Ronowitz for his name. One of these two guys, I think Mark Bilk. So he used Slater's label basically as a kind of protest for itself. And so I still like this label, so we have to refine the details.
I think it's relatively easy for an objective-minded person to see that there were no plane crashes at any of these four sites. There's almost no evidence for a violent collision of one of these large airplanes. Nico, let me interrupt regarding that. And Mark from Pennsylvania is back on the line. Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Nico. How you doing?
Hey, Mark. I'm fine.
This is Mark Allen, and Nico knows of me a little bit through Paul LaGloria, and I had a question.
Oh, perfect.
And
right
a
transcription.
There you go. I have a question and a statement.
Good.
Do you guys know what ground zero, what the word means when you look it up in the dictionary?
I always thought it was, I haven't done that, but I thought it was the site of a nuclear explosion.
That is correct. The site directly below, directly above, or at the point of detonation of a nuclear weapon.
Yeah,
that's what I thought also in the beginning, that they coined that word to let us look into that direction. Exactly.
So do you think that they're just messing with us when they say that, or?
No, I would say that insiders are always using a kind of insider humor. So they laid out so many stuff that for sure you are pointing some particular directions. And I guess you want to look into the direction if they use nuclear weapons additionally. And I'm saying you have to go much more into detail and saying unconventional weaponry includes already unconventional nuclear weapons. But since they work with antimatter weapons and neutrino weapons, it's very naive to use just one name like mini nukes or something like this. Also, direct energy weapons is just one label for a lot of sophisticated additional weaponry. So I'm always saying whether the hits one and two and the disintegration itself, they use directed energy weapons plus X. And X can include also what you probably would like to lay out, any kind of sophisticated minimal nuclear weapons, but maybe not just over the whole area, but just maybe one, two floors. It could have been that they even play with some neutrino weapons which can neutralize.
Nico, would you accept the very general label, and we'll see what Mark is getting at, that they're unconventional or exotic weapons that would include energy weapons or perhaps some nuclear-type weapon, but it would be exotic?
The whole mix, I'm saying, and Walker Kruger says the whole sink was used because also it's economically better. If you test all things at the same time, you can immediately put them in computer programs and sophisticate and improve these weapons. And since that it's huge research on
that. Wouldn't that be redundant and more complicated? You're saying kitchen sink the way your friend Warren Cucurullo puts it, right? Kitchen sink, they used a lot of things.
Yeah, it's basically the testing results in advance and computer programs. Then they're doing some tests, whatever, in Desert of Nevada, but also at Fermilab Chicago, at KK Japan. It was an international corporation. I'm not using the word inside job. I'm using the word outside job. It's a false flag from transnational fascists, and they have to make sure that they can profit as much as possible. So all these.
Let's go back to Mark. You had a statement you wanted to make.
Actually, more of a revelation, which I have not heard any of you guys talk about. A couple of weeks ago, I was hanging out at my local park. I'm in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. And I overheard someone talking about how Michael Jordan was a sellout. And anytime I hear someone talking truth like that, I go up to them and I talk about 9/11. And when I was talking about 9/11, I'm sorry?
Can you repeat the name? Can you repeat the name again?
Yeah, Michael Jordan. They were saying that Michael Jordan said that, you know, he doesn't sell sneakers to inner-city black folks.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay, good.
And they were black, and they disagreed with it. So when I heard that, I kind of jumped on the conversation. Mm-hmm. I was telling them my interest in 9/11, and she goes, oh, my sister was a survivor of 9/11. And, boy, did my ears perk up. And I said, tell me about that. She said, yeah, she went to work at 7:45 in the morning. It's important to realize that, you know, the first hit was at 8:46 in the morning, so it was almost an hour before. And she said she wasn't allowed into the building because...
Which building?
I don't remember. I think it was the South Tower.
Okay.
She said she wasn't allowed... Actually, they weren't allowed in either tower because at 7:30 there was a fire drill.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, how were there any people in the building? When we see people waving and jumping... How can that be if no one was
Well, that was almost all from the North Tower, the jumpers.
But what I'm saying is, how could, if both buildings were evacuated, I'm sorry?
I always, you know, we 9/11 researchers, activists, accept the 3,000 lost lives number, although 1,500 left no trace.
But can I rebut that?
It might be 1,000, but yes, okay, so rebut that.
There were 70,000 people plus who worked in those buildings on a typical day. They were all told that it was safer to go back to your office, yet only only 4% of the people died that day. How can that be?
That's not really true, Marcus, what you're saying is, you know that the first attack was before 9 a.m., and so at that time there was no notice at all. You're referring probably to the messenger story where some people got warned over some messengers. There must have been a very low insider number, and these people did not show up. But it must have been just 20 or 100 or 300, and it was all before 9 a.m. What are you talking about, the hypothesis that basically less people died or whatever, they planned it exactly before 9 a.m. because obviously... Maybe I had some scruples not to kill 70,000, but just a very limited calculated number. And
the conventional number for normal workforce was 50,000, about 25,000 per tower.
Yeah.
But we're in the same order of magnitude. So, Mark, do you want to continue on the other side of the break?
I would like to, yes, thank you.
Okay, Dynamic Duo will return with more interesting conversation regarding what happened on 9/11. I am your guest host, Morgan Reynolds, filling in for Jim Fetzer. My website is nomoregames.net. And before the break, we were having a three-way conversation with Mark Allen from Pennsylvania, who says he talked to a woman who reported to the South Tower at the World Trade Center on the morning of 9/11 and was not allowed to go to work because allegedly a fire drill was in process, no entry. So this raises, among other questions, if true, how many victims were there? If the towers were devoid of most of their worker population. So Mark, you want to pick up at that point?
Absolutely, and I appreciate
Mark,
you letting me go. I'm sorry?
I have a suggestion. I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm calculating all to 40 minutes of time. I'm sure you should go right into the beef and saying what else is on your mind. And I have a general thought, I believe that the whole 9/11 is written as a system. And I believe that main parts of 9/11 were written by Germans, or British system theory thinkers, and they had to make sure that enough details is through looping each other. And so for extreme thinkers like you, and especially also isolated thinkers, they had to have particular details laid out in the oven, and then putting some elements which seem to contradict each other within the so-called honeypot fruit loop. And so that is Edna Clinton, and then these are the jumpers. And they made it so illogical that it attracts people like you who feel maybe isolated from all the rest of the researchers and basically jump on that to have their own field. Would you agree with that?
Well, now, wait a minute. Nico, I take it you're questioning Mark's motives here, right?
Well, I try to analyze the motives, and I'm trying to help him, saying, this is, we are captured with a lot of trials, and we learn over the 7-8 years to minimize these trials by just saying, we declare them as fruit loop. And so Edna Clinton is a psychological fruit loop for a hero, trial, and the jumpers are the same. So they spliced the jumper thing into a authentic video, plus manipulated and doctored newspaper photos. And so made it a little
Let me give it back to Mark to see what he has to say in reply.
I'm not sure if, yeah, I couldn't tell if Nico was complimenting me or not, but it's irregardless. I'm a stupid guy with a lot of common sense. Hmm. And common sense tells me, let's say that you're right about the 50,000, let's even lower to 25,000, and let's put aside that there are 20,000 visitors who come there every day, from what I understand, too. So let's put those aside. You've got 25,000 people who might have been in that building at that time, all told repetitively, according to the USA Today, it's safer to go back to your office. It's safer to go back to your office.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That message apparently was broadcast at the South Tower after the North Tower went off.
Fine, then let's cut that in half again. Let's say 15,000 people or 12,500 people were at the South Tower and they kept hearing that. Why didn't 95% of those 12,000 people die?
You know, this is kind of a detail that it's hard to discuss without doing some homework, but as I recall, the number who they attribute to dying in the South Tower was it was a triple digit number, and a number of them were first responders. Once the South Tower was gone away, then evacuating the North Tower, however many were there, was pretty sensible, wasn't it?
So you're saying that the majority of people.
Suppose we granted your suspicions. What would you make of that, Mark?
Well, I don't think there are people in the building when the 9/11 event occurred. I mean, there might have been a few. There might have been, you know, early response.
So there were fake names would follow.
Publicized
as were it was true of the airline passenger manifests.
In fact,
is that what you're suspecting?
2 weeks ago, someone moved in who is a flight attendant for United. She said she personally knew. I just had this conversation with her yesterday. She personally knew all of the people who died in 9/11 from United Airlines. I went to the SSDI database, which is incredibly accurate. If you put in SSI's Social Security Death Index.
Yeah, they claim 84% accuracy.
I think it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, well, I haven't had the same success.
I
put in my entire family who died, and it even knew what their birth state was. So let's say, again, let's go with your figure. Let's say it's 75% accurate. Not one person who worked on all four planes is in the death index. Not one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's an interesting research, and I'm very open-minded on the DNA as well. But again, it's a fruit loop. It's like we're coming up to any basic result because we don't know what DNA is authentic. Because I don't believe actually that you can prove from nothing that anyone died. But that's hey,
do either one of you know, you know, Thomas Potter has done an awful lot of work, all in emails. I asked him to put it together, or I'd put it together, or however, showing fakery in these names on the airline passenger list. And, Mark, you're doing the same here. We need a really good article on that. I don't think we have it yet.
But I think there will never be an article because these people know what they're doing. It's basically like the Holocaust denial. The details are so complex that you cannot, at the end, you cannot prove anything. You just have the event itself. We have disintegration. We have missing numbers.
Well, every time we show there's a falsehood in the official account, that creates more weakness in the belief in the official account.
That's the official definition of a false flag. So the false flag. Marcus is now into it, is analyzing how many did people die instead of who sponsored the killing. It's the same like the Holocaust denial was also designed in advance, the people discussing more of the gas chambers and actually figure out that IBM and maybe Sony did 9/11. Let's just think about the same.
Well, Mark, we'll give you one more shot.
Okay, yes. The final thing for me is the stock market opened, 3 days after 9/11?
They heard. I think it was. Wasn't it the first Tuesday after 9/11?
So that'd be a week.
I think there were only five. It were opened in five working days, but they did rush it. Yes.
Now you know, and I'll leave on this note. You know that all the people who were in that building were Wall Street types. How is it that so many people died, but they were able to open Wall Street in just 5 days?
And there's Mark Allen's question. Yes, Nico, comment.
I think just the game had to continue. There was a lot of money to make. Cannot put Ross in hall, but very
well. I agree with that. They didn't want the financial center of the world to be discontinued indefinitely. Here we are at the Dynamic Duo. We'll be back after these messages. Today, I'm Morgan Reynolds. I'm your guest host, sitting in for Jim Fetzer. My website is nomoregames.net. And I'm interviewing Nico Haupt, H-A-U-P-T. You can Google him and come up with lots of stuff. Now, Nico, in the last segment, you were getting at Mark and this whole problem of chasing our tails, wasting our time, never solving anything, and the whole honeypot, Easter eggs, and... Yes.
Well, let's sum it up as I'm using cartoon language for this since 2 or 3 years since we went over to war over cartoons. We have all people within the movement who are not able to reflect their own Fruit Loop elements. I call them the Fruit Loopers. Fruit Loopers basically work with a kind of reset button, or more radically, these are the reset buttoners. So basically, what they're doing is a kind of endless loop, which is
reset, yes.
Yeah, so the in itself has no report compared with the computer. The controller is always starting the same kind of program. But the problem is that Marx has actually some interesting things to say, but he doesn't come to any conclusions. So he could, for instance, think, yeah, who did 9/11, and he will basically, again and again, of curation through them end up like the Jesuit versus the Masons. And so we have another obscuration. So there's always an obscuration.
So we keep on examining individual trees and never see the forest. So let me set a couple questions up for you.
I'm saying just one more point, and I'm coming off from an investigative angle. For instance, Colombo,
Peter Falk, Colombo.
Yeah, so that's why I created also Nicolombo. I'm saying, listen, guys, it's always about indictments, yes, and it's always about arrests. But if you talk about Masons, Jesuits, you can't arrest them because there's so many. So you have to stop someone. And so,
Who would make the arrest is a part of the problem too. We don't have any prosecutors willing to pick it up here after Jim Garrison of New Orleans' experience with JFK.
Well, that's the problem, and that's why I'm also don't believe really in the kind of prosecution process, but I believe in chaos principles. And right now, we have multiple matrices competing with each other. We have the TV world, the tube world, we have the internet world, and we have fake oppositions squeezed in between. Like, we have a fake anti-war movement, human rights. They're all infiltrated. We have to come from a completely outside bird perspective to see how it operates. It's a system theory, and you can actually topple these things. by using YouTube and video portals, which is the most popular thing right now on the internet, and to basically squeezing out so many messages to slow down in a physical process the manipulated message for mainstream media. And so this is our chance. And so you can
so
learn
so
all the names you have.
This is your strategy. Are we going to win? I know that's a prediction, but what do you think? Are we going to win?
It depends on how many people jump on this strategy. It's a kind of script kiddie, social engineering. It's an old hacker system. You slow down one system by the system itself slow down, but you can pump in more energy. And so that's why we're creating all these 9 video mashups. We work then for sure also with spider tags.
We're going to win. If we're going to win, you advocate your personal strategy is to use these video mashups and other, YouTube type techniques, right?
That is what we currently have, but people have to be much more going into scripting and programming. It's basically very simple. You can also download scripts, but you have to automatize a lot of things. Yes, is this completely incorrect? Yes, you're becoming part of an in political structure, the perps using too, but since we have still visual message, you can make a point by saying, "Well, this is my point. I'm a comedian, or I'm a guy who has more political context." So the more attention you attract, the slower the other system becomes, and this is I think is a kind of strategy you can follow, and it's all we have right now because.
We're going outside. You got to go outside the mainstream traitorous media, and that's your personal strategy. And you're recommending this for others to spread the message.
Yeah, we have, for instance, great social engineer activists like DJ Shu. That's for me, my personal influence. I came from social engineering when I was young. I did all these mock phone calls to get this information, and he's a great entertainer. We need much more people like him. It for sure influenced somehow then the other opposition schools changed. I'm a big fan of them. I love them. I love Troy. He's using the same thing to ridicule in an okay way for me, the cult obsession of truthers. And think about it, strategy. You sometimes do coalitions with people for a while because it makes you more powerful. Like, if people call me Nico Hitler and say, okay, I'll work with Stalin then for a while. Let's see how we can slow down the other side.
Let me ask this. Does this, your marketing approach, does this have to persuade large numbers or only critical few numbers?
I'm a big statistics fan. I think we manipulate also the Hollywood movies. I manipulated over the movie Network. Which predicted kind of Al-Qaeda on television, but I'm also analyzing statistics, minute ratings. So I'm thinking, my current conclusion is actually that only strong minority will make a difference. I'm calculating for both no-planers and plane hunters a dynamic for a number of just 4,000 people. And that's very realistic. You can then go further and analyze 5 different 6 digits and you will end up in the voyeurism field. That's why we used exploitation and very rare explanation to attract these people. But again, these are the couch potatoes. So the awareness might be in a huge number between 6 and 7 digits. This is what I think we believe social service and climate check has reached so far, which again is the majority of couch potatoes.
Okay, so something like September Clues has worked very well, you're thinking?
Yeah, I think it works very well. It has not the... not the awareness yet from, let's say, the loose change success, but I analyzed that 80% of the population worldwide has access to any kind of media knows that the 9 Truth Movement does exist, which is already something. Now, furthermore...
Let me ask you about the outside North America. My impression is that outside North America, percentages know that 9/11 was a false flag operation versus in North America where lower percentages do. Is that your impression?
It's correct a little bit. They're under the notion that this notion does exist. And so whether they agree with that or not, I'm not sure. But they know that the notion does exist that it was a nine-fold thing. That's already also a huge number.
Yeah, that's it's a good start.
And
when they question the official story, they know there's an alternative view of events.
So now we analyze basically the metrics of the internet, saying, well, people are generally lazy. So what are they doing? The most laziest people, what they're doing? Well, it's sex, drink, and rock and roll. And so this is why we reach out to that audience. But it's just, for instance, one element of entertainment you can produce.
These are people you're trying to reach who are disinterested in this issue.
I'm interested because I'm coming from that angle. I'm coming from party background. I'm coming from audio DJs, video engineers. And these people getting the evidence of TV fakery also faster because they live in systems. They have to know how a system works. I believe that name on this specialist know about the no plane and their surroundings. Sincere thinkers, all the engineers like Simon Shake. So you reach out over these party people, the DJs, the VJs, and so on.
Okay, the dynamic duo returns with Nico Hopp for the last segment after this break. And I'm interviewing Nico Hopp, a well-known 9/11 researcher, activist, all-around troublemaker. We're getting his thinking about where we are in the battle over 9/11. And I wanted to get your take, Nico, on a couple of these issues. One was, I have the impression that no plane-ism is gaining adherence. It's a semi-respectable, kind of the logic and the evidence is accumulating. I'm reminded of one example that I find powerful. Let's see what you think here. John Lear, the retired airliner pilot and former CIA contract pilot, etc., son of the famous Lear, co-founder of Motorola, et cetera, the Learjet. And he points out that in these fake videos of Flight 175 at the South Tower, there's no strobe lights. There's no strobe lights visible on any of these videos, which go off 84 times per minute by FAA regulation. It's so airplane pilots can identify other aircraft. And you can see those on landing and takeoff at any airport, those powerful strobe lights. So just one fact like that blows out these fakes. And sometimes it's frustrating that more people don't acknowledge what's going on here. But what do you think? Are we gaining ground here?
I would generally say we're gaining ground. But, again, it's about analyzing also system theories. And we have the no-planers. Label itself was always more focusing on the science, while the 9 TV fake, we really just focusing on the visuals. And so I think that the no plane in itself became very huge popular, but remains in the spoken word, while the 96 people constantly follow the top. There is no leadership at all. It works like a DJ culture. We reject all sophisticated cults and destabilization processes. So that's what the other side doing the plane, and they declare themselves as an owner hierarchy system. That Alex Jones, the Scientology related issues to help. So they're putting so much side issues, side ideologies in. And am I still on the phone?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, I'm hearing some beeping.
Well, yeah, I heard some interference there. Go ahead.
So I'm saying no planes yet became more popular. The awareness is there. 9 TV fakery has more creativity than ever. We have 200 artists now, producers, and they have all different styles to point out that there was TV fakery. We have 3D specialists now. The only realists, we have new animator geniuses like Euro 101. So if you look into my weekly chart, which is just a kind of parody on Billboard charts, you find a lot of variety. And so this is getting more popular, and so PSYOPs still work against it. We have still people, former occult victims, people know what I'm talking about, who have programs themselves running to destabilize all the time. I'm not blaming paternal persons. It's just the element of how a cult or a cult victim works. So we have to deal with that. We have to point it out again in the video. We do it again in the comedy or transgression, whatever. We have to be sometimes political also. We can't just say, oh, let's just go to the facts and see what happens.
Nico, if somebody wants to go on the web, and what should they look for? How would you advise them regarding a website? Or just Google your name?
Well, definitely check out 911videomashups.com. Just figure out how many
911videomashups.com.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I'm working like a magazine. I'm analyzing what kind of videos come out, who's the majority, and it's clearly that we have the most output now, the so-called no-planers. We work much more with mirrors, and yes, people use soccer puppets. I have no problem with that, as long as they have the characters on the console. It's the element of the internet. I can be with multiple identities. I grew up with crazy people. I'm still sane, but it's like organizing a room. And if you have too much things going on, a little bit chaotic, some people can organize, some not. I think a lot of people who organize the soccer puppets are very cool. Some are a little bit messed up, but that's the purpose. Figure out what's the best system. And again, 9videomashups.com has weekly charts. You will see what's going on. I love also opposition like School Change. They're getting better, more entertaining. I love Troy. I'm doing our T-shirts with Ron. That's another idea to appeal to
what
people.
What was that? You're also doing what?
I try to be a nice guy sometimes, so I'm not a party guy. The nice T-shirt, nice sticker on.
Oh, T-shirt, yes.
Yeah, hotcouture.com, very important. Because after all, we just want to have fun. And that's the honest, most honest point I can make. I never really liked politics. I was always very irritated with infiltrations at the top.
Take me into the minds of the perpetrators. Is there another 9/11 coming, or are we just at completely uncertain regarding that?
You should look. Just Google my research name. You in 2001? I do it by myself, and everything what comes to mind, like direct energy weapons or 9/11 fakery, should pop up. And so, and then you will find a list of 40 contractors who I think did 9/11, and that's Boeing, Lockheed, SAIC, TRW, Germans, Krauss-Maffei, Wegmann, and it's very opposed and sabotage research, but since there's an application around which can integrate direct entrance and T-fake elements, I think that's the application they use at least.
Yeah. Some of the contractors worked for NIST on its cover-up reports.
And NIST was also part of the Future Combat System as a known contractor. There are four groups led by Boeing, Dennis Muhlenberg. I'm giving out names. I'm giving out telephone numbers. I'm even calling up these people. Or I did. I'm not as good at DJ shows, so I do it in a comedy way. And right now I'm kind of...
Is the Future Combat System you believe was used on 9/11, does that involve faking the background as well as the objects of interest?
That's what I'm thinking. We have video fakery, which is more non-life piece. We have media fakery, which is pretty much accepted mainstream, like actors and extras, which were used, which were falling from a script, and then just thought, I'm doing a good thing, because they're not really lying in that context. So TV fakery, as my own personal label, is more on the live. And yes, we have, obviously, SimCity thing, which this application can do. You can just... Boom, and in real time you zoom, and then you use one-to-one mirror of that same element. And that in that context, you still use authentic landscape, but it's now a kind of punching ball, which you can jiggling around, and you add and remove buildings, and you can loop smoke, and you can even supersize smoke, which you also saw. So they hide a lot
of
things.
So that's kind of compositing of a different, more elaborate sort.
Yeah, no matter what the name of the application was, they have these kind of applications. Google Earth and Future Combat System, basically, in a merge, is a thing I think they use. And it doesn't matter which name they have for this. This is also linked to SDI. So I'm doing there's a lot of SDI research. It never stops. It's also a hoax, because there is no threat from outer space. They're using that money to sponsoring drug and biopharmacy business and future wars and bionic fascism. We have a lot of more things to face in the future than just hang around and fighting no pains versus plain targets. We have pending bionic fascism, separation between men and women is on the plan. It's like any kind of artificial cows linked to artificial Schwarzenegger.
So the powers that be have had nothing to fear so far, even though they're ruthless, etc. Now, one more thing regarding energy weapons. At one time you said they were a limited hangout and Reynolds and Wood were disinfo agents, but now you include them, right?
No, I would say Reynolds is my favorite comedian, surrounded by sophisticated, unequaled, multiple personality identities like Judy Wood. And I love Ron Reynolds in that identity. But he
all right. Well, that's what partly we want. Okay, thank you, Nico Haupt, for coming on the Dynamic Duo. Just Google Nico Haupt, H-A-U-P-T, and you'll find some very interesting things. We got into the mind of Nico Haupt this afternoon. This is Morgan Reynolds for the Dynamic Duo, and thank you for listening.